Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike DeTeo along with Charlie Long in studio at 520, or a little after. Mark Schlereff will join us, NFL Odyssey insider, talk to us about the Saints, also all things happening across the NFL, a couple of big moves today by NFL teams. And at 540, it'll be our pick six segment, myself along with Charlie, Steve Geller, and we got Bobby J's picks too, so we'll give you that segment also. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Let's go to Lawrence. Lawrence, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, Mike and Charlie.
Yeah, Lawrence.
What's up, Lawrence?
Did you guys hear me?
Yes, sir. Sure can. Go ahead, Lawrence.
First of all, how you guys doing this evening?
We're doing good, Lawrence. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I'm calling because before the season started, me and the group of fellas I hang with, of course, we're Saints fans, I told them that the Saints have already hired their next head coach. If the Saints start out slow, or if they don't make the playoffs this year, they'll be gone, and they're going to hire Clint Kubiak as the next head coach. What do y'all think about that?
Lawrence, if you listen to our Visit Pensacola Saints coaches show last night, Bobby kind of led Executive Vice President, General Manager Mickey Loomis into the point 6 to 8 coaches get fired every year.
He says it all the time, and he's right.
And that part's true, and sometimes you get it in the middle of the season, which – unusual for Woody Johnson to do, but can't tell me Aaron Rodgers ain't had something to do with Robert Saleh getting hooked. But Mickey said, okay, I agree with that, but that we are all about the process, letting this go through. There's a lot of games left to play. So I'm not saying it wouldn't happen during the season, but he's basically telling you, unless events really spiral out of control, he's not making that move during the season. After the season's over with, they'll make that conclusion, and I agree with you that Clint Kubiak would be on the list of people that you're going to talk to. I don't know that he's the front runner, but he is somebody I think they would certainly talk to.
And on the off chance that they do make a move, and
it would be Darren Rizzi.
It would be Darren Rizzi, correct. You mentioned that last night, Mike, the special teams coordinator. You know, he would become, like, I guess, the interim guy, right, if they were to move on from DA at some point during the season. But taking Mickey's words at face value, like, I mean, you were joking about it last night that he said it without saying it, but he said it. He said it flat out, that they're going to let the process play out. They're going to see how the season goes. Now, if things completely fall off a cliff, right, and we're talking about maybe 5 to 10 games from now, things are just awful. Maybe. But at the same time, we know that it's rare, Mike, for a coach to get fired in the middle of the season. It just doesn't happen that often.
And how much success you get out of that?
I mean,
get short term, maybe?
It happens from time to time. I think what happened with the Jets is extremely rare, where it happens within the first 5 weeks of a season. Like, typically,
you know that look reminded me of an NBA move. Star player, man, I don't want him as my coach. Get somebody else.
Yeah, I agree. But as far as, you know, moving on from a coach during the season, typically that happens in the back half of the season. It does not usually – like, the Robert Saleh thing was unusual, to say the least. But we all know, obviously, Aaron Rodgers had a hand in that. Aaron Rodgers had a hand, as we were saying earlier, in making the trade for Davante Adams. And that's a 2-4 Jets team. And that's a bad offense right now. But he's still got that much cachet in that organization. As for the Saints and Dennis Allen, yes, you could potentially see them moving on if things continue this way. But it's not going to happen anytime soon. Like, some people were saying, you know, if they get blown out on Thursday night by Sean Payton and the Broncos, yes, it's obviously not going to be a good
look. I did hear Mickey last night.
But listening to what Mickey said, and that's all what I'm saying, is based off of what he has said, they're going to let it play out. They're going to give it, you know, multiple weeks before they make any kind of a move. And if they were, as you mentioned, Mike, it would be Darren Rizzi taking over.
Yeah, because that way you basically, your special teams coach kind of takes over as the head coach. Kubiak's running the offense. Joe Woods would take care of the defense. But Mickey basically threw cold water on all of that last night, saying we entered the process of going through all this and we'll make that evaluation if we have to down the road. This team has never been a quick hook team with coaches. And so while Lawrence, I do agree that I think if something happened – after the year, Clint would get certainly an interview.
Oh, absolutely.
But he's not what I would think it would be the front runner for the job. I get where you're coming from with all that, but I wouldn't say he's the front runner to get the job if a move is made after the 2024 season. If it's made in the season, I would put some cash on Darren Rizzi.
And I'm just saying, if it happens during the season, don't expect it to happen in the front half. That's all I would say.
We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. And Mark Schlereff, our NFL insider from Odyssey, will join us right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long in studio. And we are joined by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereff, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Mark, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
You got it, guys. Always my pleasure.
Mark, boy, if you were a Tampa Bay fan, you'd really have liked what you saw Sunday. You're talking about 277 yards rushing on 35 carries, 7.9 yards a rush. In the second half, it was a demolition job on what they did running the football against the Saints defense. You've been in spots where everything seems to click, and you went up against a team. It looked more like pinball. There wasn't a lot of effort on the tackling part. It was just sort of bouncing off of players. Kind of talk a little bit about that. When you physically beat a team like that in the trenches, that feeling you have as an offensive lineman.
Yeah, there's nothing better, because you know, as beat up as you get from, you know, dispensing justice, you know how beat up they are. And there's nothing more humiliating for a defense than to not be able to stop the run. Like, listen, man, you give up an 80-yard throw over the top, you know, on a busted coverage or whatever, and everybody just goes, oh, hey, man, you know, got to be better. We can't have that mistake, you know, blah, blah, blah. But when it's consistently 5 yards, 7 yards, 15 yards, 6 yards, 8 yards, boom, you know, 40-yard touchdown. Like, when you do that to a team, you just beating them down like that. You watch the infighting, you know, through the linebackers and the safeties and the defensive linemen, and they're screaming at each other. There's nothing more satisfying for an offense to watch that go down. I remember years ago, right after I was playing with Denver, we're the number one seed in football in 1996, and we lose to Jacksonville on, you know, what I thought was just a garbage game plan. And I hated it coming into the game, and, you know, it proved to be right, where they could get us to check out every run we had. Terrell Davis, at the end of the day, this guy that had 1,800 yards rushing that season. And they got us to check out of our run game to the point where I think we gave it to Terrell Davis, who's averaging, you know, 25, 30 carries a game. I think he got it 12 times for 95 yards or something crazy like that, right? Then the following year, we played Jacksonville in the playoffs again, and we hung 305 yards rushing on Jacksonville in that game. It was like, you guys ain't going to get us to check out of nothing. Ain't no run we're checking out of. We're just pounding you. And, you know, TD came out at, like, in the third quarter, and then we had two backup running backs go for 100 each. So, yeah, it's glorious to watch a team, not to be a part of that team, you know, obviously not to be a fan of New Orleans, but if you're in Tampa, man, it's glorious to watch that go down.
One of the things we've talked about with the Bucs, and you've seen it sort of work over the last 3 years, they've won the NFC South. Last year, I don't think anybody picked them to win the NFC South when the season started. Baker has really played better than anyone thought he would at this stage. But it's been their kind of retooling of the roster. Every draft choice in the 2024 draft class made the team. Over the last 2 years, they've hit on all but one draft choice, didn't make the team. And over the last 3 years, it's 26 out of 30. And how this team got from a Brady and a Gronk and an Ndamukong Suh, Devin White, who was still a young player in this league, but they cut him loose. They had other guys. Leonard Fournette was on that team. And they've gotten to be a really young roster. And when the season started, only two guys that they didn't draft were starters. Now, that's changed a little bit because of injuries, but one's Baker Mayfield, and the other one's the offensive lineman, Ben Bradenson. How did they have done that in a very quiet, soft rebuild? But they've done it through the draft.
Yeah. Yeah, well, part of it was necessity. Right?
Yes.
Part of it was like, hey, man, we spent all this money on aging veterans, and so we had to cut those guys loose. So these guys are going to have to play, and they're going to have to figure out a way to win. And it started, you know, even back when Brady was there.
Yep.
So, you know, they started playing some younger players, some of their draft picks, and their draft picks were, you know, dispersed between veteran players that could teach them kind of how to play. And then the last 2 years, they really had to turn that roster over, but they've done a great job of getting not only really good players, but the right type of player, right? The guy that's going to hustle, the guy that's going to, you know, play hard, do all those things. And they've got enough veteran leadership, you know, on that roster with guys like Lavonte David. You know, he's going to play the game the right way, and guys that get around him are going to learn how to play the game the right way just like that. They've got guys like Tristan Wirfs on that offensive line. They're going to teach the younger guys how to play the game the right way. So they've done that with younger guys. They went out and got a free agent at the right tackle position. Who'd they get? Gedeki, I think, is who plays there for them. They got him, and he has been a real pleasant surprise. So they've done a really good job with some lower key free agent guys, like what they did with Baker. And then, you know, they've had those draft picks pan out, and then they've had superstars, you know, that have just played the game the right way. Mike Evans is incredible, plays the game the right way. Chris Godwin's one of the great football players in the National Football League, bar none.
Saints
plays
fans don't like
right
to see him play against him. I'm telling you right now.
I mean,
he's been much more of the killer than Mike Evans has.
Oh, he's because, you know, you roll in coverage of Mike Evans, you're trying to take him out. And Godwin is just a football player, man. And there's very few guys who kind of set the tone, you know, kind of the toughness tone on the offensive side of the ball from the receiver position, and he is one of them. So they've done a really good job of building that roster, and they just have done, like, they have just done a really nice job. Jason Light over there, the GM, has done a really nice job, and part of that, you know, is he knew he paid the piper to bring Brady in and to win that Super Bowl, and he knew, listen, man, this buys me some time. Like, it buys me some time. And he just has hit on every guy pretty much. And some of them are necessities, but he just pretty much hit on every guy in the draft. And they have rebuilt that roster, like, in a heartbeat. And, of course, you couldn't have assumed that Baker was going to play as well as Baker did. And he got better as the year went on. But now he's got a ton of swagger back, and he's playing really good football.
Mark, it's in your neck of the woods, so to speak, but a little bit of a scouting report on the Broncos. You know, Sean was always noted here, high-powered offense, put a lot of points on the board. But he's winning in Denver. His defense has played really well. They run the football. Young quarterback, hey, just don't make a ton of mistakes. Just play, you know, and go to the right spot. And one thing with Bo, kind of knowing his background, he got a thick hide. And you better have one if you play for Sean, because he's going to get on you. And, you know, Bo is willing to flip it right back, because he's been through adversity in his life, too. And, you know, you look at those days at University of Auburn. But for people that maybe haven't seen this team a lot, a little bit of a breakdown, the strengths and the weaknesses of the Denver Broncos.
They're really good on the defensive line. They're really, really good there, and they've got some speed and athleticism at the second level of their defense as well. Safety's playing really well. They've lost – listen, they're not going to have their star corner in PS2, Patrick Surtain, the second, right? So he went out with a concussion last week. He won't – I don't think he'll clear protocol by Thursday night. So you're not going to have him. So, you know, that adds to the issues that they had a little bit on defense last week. But they're going to play hard. They're going to fly around. They're going to make plays. They're very multiple. They're very diverse. They bring a lot of pressure. They're not afraid to blitz you, man. They are not afraid to bring five, to bring six, to bring a zero blitz. They're not afraid. They'll err on the side of aggressiveness, and they make a lot of plays on that side of the ball. So that's what's kept them – you know, that's what's kept them in games. Ultimately, offensively, they're talent wise, I think their talent is a little bit on the meager side. So, you know, Courtland Sutton is their best receiver. I don't think he's a true number one, but he's their number one receiver. And you've seen a lot of teams rolling coverage to him and not being afraid to go man-to-man everywhere else. They haven't had a tight end since really, like literally since Shannon Sharp. Like, they have not had a productive tight end, and Sean still doesn't have a tight end that threatens anybody in the middle of the field. And when you watch Bo last week, his footwork was frenetic. He dropped his eyes and, you know, and looked the rush. He got he decided to run well before, you know, like if he just waits a half a beat, somebody's going to come open on a crosser. Like he missed. The first half was as bad as I've seen him play since he came there. Like it was a bad look. Second half, he played much better. I think Sean adjusted some of his offense, gave him some quick options, gave him a quick game, you know, where it's a three-step drop, get the ball out, instead of trying to protect him, you know, with chips and everything else and keeping backs and tight ends in, try to give him a bit of a quick game. He seemed to excel at that a little bit. He's exceptionally athletic, man. He can run. He can motor in the pocket. But I thought his pocket presence for the first time was really poor. I thought there was some really poor decision-making on his behalf. He regressed last week, and I'm not sure exactly why that is, or why that happened, but I'm expecting a much better, calmer guy. And, you know, you're 100% right about Sean. Like, Sean's going to get in your butt about stuff. So I know that's going to be addressed, and I would assume we'll see a little bit more of an up-tempo, get-the-ball-out-of-your-hand game, kind of like when they went into Tampa and beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 26-7. That whole game was based on, hey, Bo, let's three-step drop, let's five-step drop, no hitch, get the ball out, let's go. And I expect them to do a little bit more of that on Thursday night.
Insider Calls with Mark Schlereth are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Charlie?
Mark, before we let you run, I couldn't let you go without asking about the NFC North and just what they've done this year. You talk about an arms race when the worst team is 4-2. That kind of tells you something. But the Minnesota Vikings playing the Detroit Lions this upcoming weekend, I think you're going to learn a lot about both squads. I mean, Detroit's coming off a shellacking in Dallas, and Minnesota's coming off a bye week, but they started out 5-0, so those are the two teams at the top right now. But then there's also Green Bay at 4-2, and Chicago has kind of bounced back from a slow start on a three-game winning streak to get them at 4-2. It just seems like a division that, you know, a lot of fans have hope early on, and I mean, rightfully so, because these are all great teams.
Mark, who's going to be left out?
It's tough.
Sort of playoff-wise,
man,
at this stage, if you look at it.
I still think Chicago's the fourth best team. I mean, they beat up on three really bad teams lately, but Caleb has gotten a lot better. Defensively, they're a really good football team. So, yeah, like that team is sneaky good. I think the Detroit Lions are the best team in football, and I think they can beat you any style of game you want to play. You want to be physically beat up, they'll beat you up physically. You want them to throw the ball over the top of your head, they can do that. We saw the trick plays against Dallas, a bunch of them. It was just almost on the disrespectful side. I loved every second of it. So, like, they've got that ability as well. So they are an outstanding football team. Obviously, Aiden Hutchinson hurts them a bit. We'll see if a trade happens to get them another pass rusher. But they're a damn good football team. And let me just say that when you're really good at running the ball, when you're really good in protections, and I would argue that they have the best offensive line in football, when you're really good at all that stuff, like, you beg teams to blitz you. And I know that Brian Flores is a really intricate scheme and it's really hard to deal with, but you're excited. Like, when you're really good, oh, I want them to blitz us. Because when they do, guess what happens? That's when you get those 80-yard chunk plays. That's when you get that 55-yard run that's a breakout run. That's like that stuff, when you have that stuff and you're good and you're a really good offense. And that's how, hey, man, that's how Flores plays. That they're going to live by the blitz. They're going to die by the blitz. And my prediction would be they're going to die by the blitz this weekend.
Mark, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always appreciate your time and always great insights. And, man, I enjoy listening to you and watching you in the morning, too. So I get a full dose today.
You guys have a great one.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Yep.
That was Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereff, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. When we come back, it'll be our Pick 6 segment here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long and Steve Geller joins us now. It's our Pick 6 segment, and Charlie, I'll let you set it up.
How nice it is to bounce back, gentlemen, after that 0-6 week that I had last week. Just the reverse. A 6-0 clean sweep for yours.
So you're 500.
Well, I'm over 500.
Well, no, you're 500 games over the last 2 weeks.
Yes, I'm 3-3 and 3-3 if you want to take it that way. But I'll take the 6-0. I'm riding high. I was riding high after a 5-1 week a couple of weeks back, and then it all came crashing down. So hopefully that doesn't happen again. I went 6-0 last week. Texas, Oregon, LSU, Bucks, Ravens, Lions, everything went great. Mike, you went 5-1. The one game we had different, OU and UT. I mean, it's understandable to expect a great rivalry matchup to be close, but OU really did stink it up, as you kind of mentioned.
Man, I was watching that game. I'm like, what the heck was I thinking with this pick?
Bobby went 4-2, and Steve went 3-3. So, resetting the standings.
All right.
I'm 20-16. Mike, you are 19-17, both above 500. Bobby and Steve, you're both at 15-21. So,
woof.
College football week 8, we got 3 games. NFL week 7, we got 3 games. I have Bobby's picks as every week as we do this. I picked 3 SEC games for college football week 8. I think that's the right thing to do. I think it's all a bunch of really fun matchups. We're going to start off in chronological order. So we're going to go number 7, Alabama opens as 2.5-point favorites at number 11, Tennessee, guys. Bobby's got Alabama in this one, and I will kick it right off and say I'm taking Bama too. I did not like how they looked against South Carolina this past week, but at the same time, Tennessee almost lost to Florida, and I've kept up with Florida quite a bit this year with Billy Napier's job on the line, and that is not a good Florida team. I'm not sold by Tennessee. Give me Bama.
Tennessee.
I am rolling with the Tide as well, so Mike is the only one taking Tennessee at home in this matchup, but that scares me, obviously. Bama being a road favorite against Tennessee here, you never like to give points as the away team, but I figure it'll all come down to maybe a field goal game, hopefully.
Shout out to Joe in the traffic studio. Bama has not let me down just yet, but then again, that was when I picked them against Georgia, so we'll see how they look against Tennessee on the road here, guys. Yeah,
Joe can't be an Alabama fan.
Oh, you're going to hear him say Roll Tide when we go to the
traffic. Well, I heard him say it before. I know where he grew up, too.
All right, so we got next up, we got number 8, LSU opens as 2.5-point favorites on the road against Arkansas. So back-to-back road favorites in the SEC, guys. Oh, Bobby's got Arkansas plus 2.5 here.
I'm going to take the LSU Tigers. Give me a BK squad on the road here at the Hogs. I just think that everything has been coming together a little bit better with the defense, so I have a little hope there and just total faith in Nussmeier to get the job done against the Hogs.
I understand where Bobby went with this. Him and I talked about this before. I will go with LSU, but I think it's razor close.
I'm with you. I'm really actually worried about this. I'm taking LSU here as well. At the same time, Arkansas terrifies me. I'm not sold on Tennessee, as I kind of mentioned. So, yes, that was an impressive win at home. There's a reason they're not ranked just yet. This could be a statement game for them. At the same time, I think LSU is kind of prepared. They have enough veterans to go into Arkansas. And, you know, even though they're riding that high from an emotional victory against Ole Miss, they have their sights set on the college football playoff. So give me LSU minus 2.5 here, guys. And then a top 5 matchup in the SEC, number 5 Georgia at number 1 Texas. The Longhorns open as 3.5-point favorites at home. Bobby's got Texas, and I took Texas last week. I'm riding with them again, guys. Give me the Longhorns here.
Man, I ain't getting off that train. Texas.
Yeah, I'm on board, too, now at Texas after that.
Clean sweep,
showing against Oklahoma for sure.
Wow. Well, even not for Oklahoma. They've beat down everybody.
Unbelievable.
And their offensive line, how are they winning the trenches? That's the big difference in Texas today than 5 years ago. Their offensive and defensive lines are so good. And Quinn Ewers, early on, you saw, I don't want to say rust, but, you know, not playing in a couple games, but then he got hot.
34 straight points against Brent Venables and that OU defense. Yeah,
got hot.
Give me UT here, guys, for sure. And Georgia didn't look great against Mississippi State last weekend either.
Has Georgia looked good all year?
I mean, the best they looked was that Bama game in the second half, but even then it's just...
That's a half.
I know. They didn't look good against Kentucky. They didn't look good against Mississippi State. I feel like this line is based off of reputation, guys. Give me UT here covering
the
3.5.
This is a new feature for UT. Now you're playing the team that steps through the ropes. Hey, I've walked down this aisle before. I've done it before. You haven't done it, but I think this is... maybe that game to say we belong here.
Go ahead, Bulldogs. Make us eat our words. We all got UT minus 3.5. NFL Week 7, guys. Thursday Night Football. The Broncos, 1.5-point favorites on the road in New Orleans against the Saints in the Superdome.
Broncos.
I'm with you again.
Yeah, sadly, I'd love to pick the Saints, obviously, to rebound and snap this losing skid. But the way things are going with injuries and just the way they
report,
the way they looked in that second half was very discouraging to me. So I got the Broncos given the 1.5 in New Orleans.
Who is Spencer Rattler thrown to?
Bub Means and what, Cedric Wilson?
Yikes.
And Juwan Johnson.
And we just had Mark Schlereth tell us how good that Broncos defensive line and secondary, even without Pat Surtain is.
But right. Without Surtain, that... You know, because he took one guy out. He would take the best receiver you got. I'd take him out of the game. That's how good he is. But their safety play has really been good. Despite losing Justin Simmons, man, their defensive line, linebackers, safeties have really played good.
So the one thing preventing this from being a clean sweep, because I have the Broncos, Bobby Abear and Caden Cannon has the Saints plus 1.5.
I thought he would go Denver.
Black and gold till he dies.
Yeah,
folks.
Well, I thought he'd pick his boy, Sean.
And shout out to the folks on Twitter that reminded me there's like this weird, I don't even want to call it voodoo necessarily, but every time Drew Brees seems to attend a game, the Saints don't have much luck.
No.
So we'll see what happens there, guys. But I got the Broncos plus 1.5, too. And then two more games. We got that NFC North battle that we kind of previewed with Schlereth a little bit. The Lions at the Vikings. Minnesota opens as 2.5-point favorites at home. Bobby has the Lions. I agree with him. Give me Detroit. Their win over Dallas was ultra impressive, and Schlereth made a great point about Brian Flores and how he plays defense. Blitz all you want against that.
You live with the blitz, you die with it.
Exactly. And so blitz all you want against that Lions offensive line. I'm taking the Lions here.
Lions.
I'm with the majority. I'm just not a believer in the Vikings. I know you are what your record is, but they still just haven't really impressed me yet. Obviously, Sam Darnold, heck of a season this year, but I'm just waiting for those Vikings to crash down to earth.
Clean sweep for the Lions, plus 2.5 on the road, guys. I'm with all of you, so we'll see what happens there. And then wrapping things up, Monday Night Football. This was, Mike, we went back and forth about which game we could have picked here to wrap up NFL Week 7, but... You know, NFC South flair here. The Buccaneers hosting the Ravens. Baltimore opens as 3.5-point favorites on the road.
Choo-choo! Derrick Henry and the Ravens.
Yeah, so Bobby has the Ravens as well.
I'm on board with you gentlemen, too. It's just hard to pick against. Right now, Baltimore, I know 4-2, but they look to be like the best team in the NFL at this moment.
The way they're playing.
Right.
The way they're playing right now.
Yeah, this is way too much parody, boys. But I'm taking the Ravens as well. It's hard to bet against them. They look great.
I'm going
to
mush all your guys' picks, but that I'm the same as you.
Yeah, right. We'll see what happens. Yeah, Baltimore on the road.
It's never good about picking with you.
You know, the Buccaneers have been kind of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And the Ravens got off to that slow start, but they've really picked it up recently. You know, taking down... A Washington team that was feeling really, really good about themselves.
And that was a good game.
It was a good game.
It was a good game. Man, the Commanders' defense is bad. Oh, my goodness. They're not very good. Jaden Daniels kept them in there. But, Washington's defense is mighty flawed.
So this is a lot different from last week, guys. We only have one clean sweep. This week we have, what, three? Yes, we have three because Bobby has the Saints. It would have been four.
You would figure.
Yeah. Well, there we go. So that's it.
No, I'm surprised. I thought he would pick his boy Sean in the Broncos, but that didn't
happen. Ride or die with the Saints.
That's it. We'll be back to finish it up here on Sports Talk in hour number two right after this break. We're finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 8 Southern. We want to tell everybody the Pelicans take on the Rockets tonight in Houston. You can hear that game on the Big 870 WWL. Pregame at 6:30, tip-off at 7. And while the Pels are on 870, we'll continue with Sports Talk, followed by the Saints Hour on WWL FM 105.3, WWL.com, and streaming live on the Odyssey app. 8 o'clock, Pelicans right back on WWL. We'll be back right after this news break.